Welcome to the Agricultural Economics Podcast. This is your host, Jessica Eyes, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Ken Foster, head of the Agricultural Economics Department here at Purdue University. How are you, Ken?
I'm doing great, Jessica. Hey, guess what? This is that time of the year when the College of Agriculture has its big food drive.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And I know how competitive you are.
Oh, it's very competitive. There's this wooden pitchfork that hangs outside my door, and it's been hanging there for 3 years now, and we're trying to go for the four-peat.
For the listeners who may not be aware, this is a
This is how I keep faculty in line with my wooden pitchfork. Yeah. No, this is the trophy for the winning department in the College of Agriculture, winning in the sense that the one that shows the greatest amount of generosity to people in our community that are less fortunate by donating the most food or in-kind donations to the local Food Finders Food Bank.
It's looking like we're doing pretty well.
I think we're doing great. I heard that we have topped 7,500 meals provided so far this year. We've got three more days. I think it's germane to our topic, too,
yes,
because we're here to talk to our guest about things related to food, right?
Indeed we are.
Yeah, our guest today is Dr. Rhonda Phillips, who is the Dean of the Honors College here at Purdue, and she's also a professor in agricultural economics in our department.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's a delight to be here, and I'm so happy to hear about the food drive. That's impressive.
Well, while you're over here, Rhonda, in the building, you might make a contribution.
Absolutely, yeah. And I will.
I'm joking, of course. Rhonda's visit is really germane, given this event that's going on in the college, because Rhonda's done a lot of work and research in the area of local foods and sustainable foods and how they relate to communities.
Mm-hmm. And not only is she the dean of the Honors College, but she also published several books, the most recent of which is Growing Livelihoods, Local Food Systems and Community Development.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
What does that mean, Rhonda?
Well, sure, absolutely. This book was a long time coming. It really was a compilation of stories and a little bit of data thrown in there and approaches that through the years have been emerging with the idea that communities can take charge of some of the aspects of their food systems, and that can translate into community development opportunities for those communities. So it came to fruition, and there's a lot of jokes you can throw in about your work in local food systems. But around a couple ideas. One is that it's really aimed at those community developers, citizen practitioners, others in the communities who want to do something around local foods. And this was the genesis of the book. My co-author is a professor of nutrition sciences at Arizona State University, and we cooked up this idea together about about 6 years ago and started working on it. And what we're finding is that people want to know more about approaches like what can they actually do in their own neighborhoods and their own communities to promote this idea of local foods, both from being able to grow some of their own food, but more than that, to creating livelihoods or jobs around that food system.
What got you interested in this topic?
Oh, well, I'm glad you ask. I know we have limited time, so I won't give you my whole life story, but I grew up on a large farm in the Deep South. Actually, all the way through college, I ran my own farm. I've been very committed to small town rural economies ever since, and I just know the value that food systems can have in connecting people to their communities and to their areas, and the cultural aspects of that as well. I've not lived on a farm since I graduated college, but I try my hand at staying involved in our local food systems wherever I go.
So, Rhonda, where do you think this renewed interest in where our food comes from and growing our own food, how's that arisen in our society? Because if you think about the last 50 or so years, the move has been for people to move away from producing food and move into other pursuits, and there are fewer farmers that make their full livelihood off of farming today than there were. But now we see this interest in local and growing your own and knowing the source. Where's that coming from?
I think you're right on target. There is a trend, and it has reemerged, and it's really emerged in the last couple of years, but we've been seeing sort of inklings of this in the last 10 years. I think it comes from a couple things. There's all sort of research on local foods from sociologists, anthropologists, economists, and a lot of others, and I think it really boils down to this. People want to know where their food comes from. They want to know how it's grown and where it's grown. And there's more awareness of the ways food is grown, and sometimes people are very interested in that. And then sometimes it's more of a cultural thing. people want to feel connected to their areas. They want to eat the foods that they may remembered when they were growing up, or they feel like reflects their culture or reflects their season of where they live, and the right kinds of food. And you know, when I was living out in Arizona, there was a very much an interest from a lot of people in what kind of foods work best here, because sometimes things don't grow that well in the desert, and there are things that do. And so the native foods, the kinds of beans and the squashes and the various foods that will actually grow in that climate, there was a resurgence of interest in sort of eating local. In other words, eating what grows best in your region and reflects the seasons and reflects your heritage and your culture. And that's one thing. And then again, like I said, preference. I mean, some people want to know and feel connected to those who grow their food. And if we look at it in one way, food is a basic human need, and we've gotten away from it. We've sort of given that over to others to figure out how to feed us. I think it's all reflective of this sort of need to reconnect to others and to have a better sense of community. Sometimes our modern lifestyles disconnect us in the way we live, the houses, the way we design them. You know, you go into a garage, you close it down, you don't sit on the front porch and see your neighbors as much as maybe we did in the past. And so I think there's a bigger trend here, and maybe it's something about connecting deeper to nature, to each other, and connecting back to our source that sort of drives us as people. We're very social creatures.
Yeah, I think sometimes our economy and our society move much faster than our DNA. And if we think about our hunter-gatherer ancestors, the ones that survived were the ones that were interested in growing things, right? Because they grew their food. And that got ingrained in our DNA, and now our society's moved on to this thing that separated us from our food production. I think maybe our DNA just screams for us to, you know,
get out there and play in the mud.
Get out there and play in the mud, grow something, or at least, you know, be a part of growing something. You know, it's just deep-rooted, as you said, you know, part of who we are as a species.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. You've hit on something that I guess the local food movement talks more and more about, is the biological aspects of this, which is we are indeed programmed. Like E.O. Wilson, the biologist, says, you know, there's something very valuable in connecting to nature, and when we disconnect ourselves, we don't do as well, either in terms of social aspects, economic aspects, or whatever, however you want to measure it, when we disconnect ourselves. And so I think you're right. It's some deep call for us to be able to know what we're eating, how we're growing it, and being connected to those who grow our food.
Well, it's neat that it can also create this unity of a community, and you know, there are these great rallying points now that are fewer and fewer in small communities. You know, as schools have consolidated, the school is no longer a focal point for the community, and you know, a farmer's market or some sort of organization, a master gardeners group or something that brings people together around some common interest, I think is really valuable for a community.
Yeah,
these are the places where people trade ideas and share thoughts and build the future.
Absolutely.
What are some tips you might have for people to become more involved and engaged in their local food systems and community development?
Absolutely. Well, if we can talk for a moment just about community development, that's really about making things better, wherever that scale is, if it's neighborhood, if it's town, city, county, region. There's even community development efforts, you know, at national levels. And so it's all about improving well-being and quality of life for the people who live in those communities. And so it's a natural then. Local foods has this sort of direct line to community development, both in process, like Ken was talking about, developing those connections, but also in outcomes. In other words, improving the quality of life for people in those areas. And so a couple of ideas, or I guess tips in terms, would be to get involved with your local area. I was just at the Food Summit yesterday for Lafayette, and turns out there's at least 11 community gardens right here in Lafayette. There may be more. That's only the people that were there talking about their gardens. And a lot of those gardens grow food for those who have low income or may not have access to fresh food. So they're growing it to give to their neighbors who are in need. But they're doing more than that. They're teaching children and teens and even adults how to grow food and where it comes from. And inherent in that is a respect for nature, and also builds connections to each other. And so there's things happening right here in our own backyard. And in terms of community gardens, that's a great way. Another way is support farmers markets and support our local producers. I mean, some are large producers, some are small. But if we can support even with a small percentage of our food dollars that we spend, we can have an impact both on our local economies, but also supporting those who want to develop businesses based around food.
That's great. As you were learning about these local food systems and community development, did anything take you by surprise?
Oh, you know, I love learning about anything that's connected to community development in whatever mode that may be. And I think the thing with food is how strongly people feel about it. I mean, I know I had strong connections having a deep rooted there's another metaphor history in foods, and I felt, you know, a deep sense of sadness when I got my first job out of college and I moved to cities, and I've lived in cities almost ever since until this move. And you know, of not being able to have that direct connection to where my food came from. And I thought maybe that was just me, you know, being a farm kid. And, you know, I just thought, well, that's the way I feel. But I was really taken aback by how strongly people feel about it and how passionate they become. And we're talking about people that can live in urban areas, growing things just on a backyard or a patio of an apartment building, all the way to people who are buying farms. And I spent about a year and a half in Vermont, this, I guess that's been 6 or 7 years ago or longer, I was just amazed by the number of young people who want to be farmers, had no farm background, had no degree or training whatsoever in anything connected to growing food or being farmers, but the number of people who were trying desperately to start farms. There were farm incubators, there were farm share programs, there were community financing programs to help people get started, there were mentors, older farmers, taking on younger farmers to help them learn how to actually even grow things. And I was just completely astounded by the number of young people who want to be farmers. So, you know, it's a trend. It's becoming cool to be a farmer.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
Isn't it so interesting?
Wasn't it always cool to be a farmer? I thought so.
I think 200 years ago, that wasn't so exciting.
Well,
so,
yeah, probably
pretty back-breaking work back then.
Yeah, but it was still could have been cool.
Yeah.
So when 90, what was it, 90% of the population in the United States were farmers 200 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that was something
sure.
Like that.
It's like, yeah,
it's
I think, you know, we, you know, oddly enough, we who didn't live in those times tend to glorify them a little bit. But if you ever meet someone like my father who will turn 100 here in this month, who farmed with horses when he was a boy, he'll tell you it wasn't as glamorous as we might think it was. But anyway, so Rhonda, how about the urban agriculture movement? Any thoughts on that and where that might be going and what the potentially positive impacts of it might be?
Absolutely, and we actually mentioned some of these cases in the book as well. I really learned a lot about urban agriculture living in Phoenix, which is, you know, 5 million people, very urbanized. There are quite a few new things happening around technology. So now I like to think that we farm smarter, not harder, so that we don't have to do that back-breaking work that others had to do in the past, but rather we integrate technology into this. And so there's some really exciting things that have happened in the last several years, and there's more coming. The hydroponics with small units that can be within someone's apartment. They can also be freestanding units in like nonprofits or public agencies. And in fact, you start seeing these popping up, sprouting up everywhere you look. And in terms of like, it's not so far-fetched that you can have a small unit growing your salad greens so that your employees at your business could get their fresh lettuce right there in the lunchroom. And so these kind of technologies are changing the nature of how easy it is to grow things. There's a lot of around vertical gardens and vertical landscaping. That was a big thing, particularly in a desert climate, because it conserves the water and you could be very efficient with your use of nutrients and water. And so instead of having a blank wall in an urban landscape, you actually have a growing wall. And that growing wall can be tied into social programs, developing workforce skills for teens to, you know, do things after school, on and on. And so often we see them, nonprofits are sort of leading the way with some of these programmatic elements. And again, technology is a huge factor there.
That's so interesting. Rhonda, thank you so much for joining us to talk about your research. Again, this is Dr. Rhonda Phillips, who is the Dean of the Honors College and a professor of agricultural economics. You've been listening to the Agricultural Economics Podcast. Again, this is your host, Jessica Ives, with my co-host, Dr. Ken Foster. You can go ahead and like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, or you can visit our website at
www.agecon.purdue.edu.
Thank you.